Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to The Podyssey, being recorded very early on an Easter Monday. There's some bleary eyes around the place. It's 9 a.m. boys, how do we feel about this early start?
It's the best way to start the day.
Yes, of course we do this
every time in the future.
Of course it is. Everyone had a nice Easter?
Yeah,
very good. Nice. Very chill.
That's good.
I've eaten
loads of chocolate, including stealing lots of my son's chocolate.
Nice.
Right, let's get to it. We've had a little something called the Oscars since we last spoke. I understand you all got together as an Odyssey crew to watch the Oscars. Is that right?
Did indeed. Yes. I was doing my usual, not very funny riffing, and I did get told to be quiet a few times during a few speeches that may have one of them in particular. I was like talking, and then someone told me to be quiet. I was like, "Oh, what?" And then the speech started. And I was like, "Okay, that actually was pretty good." But other than that, very, very enjoyable.
Watch the whole thing.
We did watch the whole thing.
How was it?
It was really fun, actually.
Was it?
Yeah. It was good. It was better than some previous years, I think. It moved along fairly quickly.
Pizza, beer. Yeah. Lots of crisps and snacks.
Yeah, that'll help.
That'll definitely help a lot.
It definitely felt like the Oscars that had the least like drama for a while. It feels like it just felt like a very standard procedure Oscars.
I reckon if you're one of the Oscars people, that's the dream for this year. Get it done, get it nice, get it finished. It's been quite mad the last few years.
When they were punching. Some like people on the internet the next day going like blah blah blah. Well, not necessarily saying they were wrong, but like there's always going to be some quibble.
Yeah, exactly.
There was the K-pop Demon Hunters winning. Was it that one animated feature? And then they got played off. People on the stage were like, "No, let us talk."
Yeah.
Who did the best speech?
I think
one of Paul Thomas Anderson's ones. I think.
Yeah.
Best director.
Consistently very good.
Yeah.
He always seems like really well prepared for the speeches, which is funny because I don't think he hasn't won an Oscar before this.
No, he
seemed very chill about that. So fair enough to him.
So what were the big winners? Was one Battle After Another best film?
Yes.
Best director?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Best director. Paul Thomas Anderson?
Best editing?
Screenplay?
Adapted screenplay.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it did a bit of a sweep.
And fair enough, because it was good. I mean, Sin is, like I was born you about last policy, like two really different, haven't really seen their light before films, I thought. Sinners and One Battle After Another. So, yeah.
I think they really represent like kind of what people want out of cinema right now, which is like, you want a bit of spectacle, you want a bit of like, you know, an escapism, but you also want that kind of grounded in reality. You want like something that speaks to you as a viewer, and the moment, and just general, you know, morals. I think there's definitely a lot of like really interesting ideas in both of those films, but wrapped up in a package that everyone can digest
properly. Exciting, yeah. And fair play, Leonardo DiCaprio is funny.
He is.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily the thing you'd first think of with him, but he is funny.
Yeah.
I think so. I really enjoyed that performance. But I guess like Michael B. Jordan winning is like the underdog for the race. Like people didn't think that was gonna. I mean, Timothy Chalamet was obviously the front runner for a bit, but the ballet. I don't know how much the ballet thing played into it. To be completely honest,
is that bad?
I didn't like. It's a kind of throwaway thing.
Well,
it?
I mean, not that it counts for much, but when they did the Sinners musical performance, I feel like they did tentpole in a ballet artist in there to do that. And like, then the camera like focuses and pans on her to be like the central point of that music performance. But, you know, also in the context of the actual film, I think it sort of makes sense as well. So,
Yeah, it does. I think I kind of like this thing where Timothy Chalamet kind of like is kind of Hollywood's enemy at the moment, and he just kind of has to keep like fighting back, and like, you know, the maybe then there's grey on both sides, but there's a fun conflict going on, and we'll see what Dune 3 kind of adds to that, because I'm sure there'll be some spicy drama around that as well.
And he is like an evil dictator in Dune.
Is he? Oh yeah, nice.
Perfect
timing.
His villain arc.
But yeah, right. I felt for him a little bit. Like, he's an actor, but he is just a young lad. And he wouldn't be the first young lad, as a kind of throwaway, to say, oh, you know.
I think so,
yeah. Opera and ballet. Like, yeah. Opera and ballet can look after themselves. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah. I mean, he also apologises in the very same clip.
It's just not...
Consistently has been saying it in interviews, though. So at least he is sticking with his guns and being like, yeah, that's my value and that's that.
Also, I did go and see an opera once, and tough going.
I personally haven't been to the ballet or the opera before. I'd like to. I'd definitely go, like, especially ballet. I think ballet I'm more interested in than opera. Mm. But, like, yeah.
So what, other than the Oscars, anything else you want to say on the Oscars?
Say I like that Amy Madigan won for Best Supporting Actress for Weapons. That was, like, really out of nowhere for a lot of people. And I really enjoyed her in Weapons. I thought she definitely deserved that. And then... I think I liked... Well, one thing I didn't like, and I think you're about to bring this up, was my favourite film of the year not being nominated for anything.
Yeah,
I'll let you jump on that, Sam.
No Other Choice, which was at the Odyssey last month, so we went to see it. That was a really terrific Korean kind of satirical drama.
Yes.
Park Chan-wook, who's done various incredible films over the years.
Original Old Boy, Neo.
Yes.
Which I know you haven't seen yet, which one day.
One day.
When we're strong enough. But yeah, I watched it again with you, and I was like, that is film of the year for me. I'm like, no doubt. I think you've seen it as well.
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
But not even shortlisted or anything?
Not even not nominated for foreign feature, which I was so... I just think it's when you watch that film, like, especially the craft of it, like, really goes...
Was it Korea's Choice?
I think it was their
probably was.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Also, I know that there's a time span for the Oscars, so technically it's within the race, but it does feel like it came a bit too late as well. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I understand it's open till it's closed, but if you imagine all those people from the Academy watching all these films, and then a Korean one sneaks in. Right at the end. I don't know. It must go up against it a little bit.
I think definitely some films do get, like, cut, like, shot out from the Oscars just, purely because of, like, logistics and kind of time-based reasons. But, you know, hopefully they all screen at festivals in the summer, I think. That's kind of where most things go on.
Right, so, Nick, what else has been going on at the Odyssey?
Not much. I mean, I've been training up for supervisor. That's something that's going on.
How's it going? Have you done your health and safety training?
I think there's one coming up actually pretty soon, isn't there? Yeah.
This week. Yeah.
Keeping everybody safe when they enjoy their cinematic
all the time.
Experience.
Yeah, all the time. I rewatched Sinners at work. That was great. It felt like I was seeing it in a different eye, which is always good when rewatching films generally. It's like you feel like you get to see it a bit differently, perhaps. Like, I always think, like, the first watch you just want to get a scope of, like, what's happening in front of you, but then in the second you sort of read through those lines.
Also, do you think with Sinners, when you first watch it, you know, because they did quite a good job of not really spilling the beans on what that was all about. So I think when you first watch Sinners, you're a bit it's a bit like being on a roller coaster. You're a bit too busy going, what is so it almost, like, tricks you, and there's probably loads of bits you miss first time around.
Yeah, and I was also just focusing on people in front of me just jumping out of their skin every time something happened. Like, it was usually just a movement or, like, a bit of a sound, like, bam! It's like, what?
Also, fair play to Sinners. Like, so, first of all, great film. See it if you haven't. Michael B. Jordan, obviously amazing. Plays two characters. Won the Oscar, rightly so. Jack Connell
really good.
Is so scary and horrendous in that film.
He's on a roll with that kind of type of villain at the moment. Like, because he also was in the new 28 Years Later.
Yeah, he's one of the Jimmies.
Yeah, he was, and he was really good in that. And actually, that was I think both of those characters are interesting in that there's actually, like, a bit of, like, a humanity to them, or, like, a bit of nuance. I feel like more, obviously, 28 Years Later kind of pronounces it a bit more, but Sinners, there is a reason he's doing what he's doing. And actually, like, when you look into it, there's actually a bit of a kind of noble, is that the word? I would say so. I'd say so. There's a bit of like a, in his eyes, you can see why he's doing what he's doing. And but also, yeah, like in terms of just that theatricality you want from like a cinematic villain, he's got it. And I particularly, I forgot about the bit where he goes, Sammy, and then thumps out.
Oh my God, that was a highlight.
I've also rewatched Sinners in the past month, and yeah, Jeff definitely... definitely solidified that it's a banger, as some people would say.
Yeah, cracking film. And presumably loads of family films over Easter holidays.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
One we'll get onto.
Yeah, one we'll talk about in a minute, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Life of Brian, a family film.
Oh, what a film, by the way. Well, did you show that?
Yeah, we showed it on Friday.
Oh my goodness.
Yesterday.
Have we all seen that?
I haven't.
I've only seen it once.
It's so good. So good.
I'll try and get around to all the... I haven't seen Holy Grail either, so I'll try and get around to the Monty Python catalogue at some point.
There's a third one called The Meaning of Life, which is kind of weird. Just loads of sketches together, but Holy Grail's good. Oh, my God. Life of Brian is, in my opinion, absolutely amazing.
Nice, okay. Priority list.
Right, somebody mentioned it there. We will come back in part two, where we're going to be talking all things Pixar, because there's a new Pixar film coming out. It's quite a big deal. We also, thanks to my selection and the Wheel of Doom, we've all had a Cars 2 viewing since the last policy. So we'll be talking a bit about that and a bit about Pixar generally and a bit about the Pixar films coming up that you can see at the Odyssey. Hello and welcome back to the second part of the Podyssey, where just off air we've decided to discuss Cars 2, which is our watch-along film, and there is some big views in this studio. Right, so first of all, chaps, the reason we're talking about that is because there's a new Pixar film coming up, Hoppers.
Hoppers,
yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first of all, Pixar, I mean, they're going from strength to strength. They're back with Hoppers. Is this a big one for them?
Surprisingly so, I would say. I think when I saw the advertisements for this, I was like, okay, this will be the next Pixar film. It'll come out. It'll get whatever it gets and people will move on. But actually, weirdly enough, I think this might be one of their most critically acclaimed in like a good while. Yeah. I personally haven't seen it yet. But I know Nick has, and you enjoyed it, I think.
Yeah, I did thoroughly enjoy it. I thought it came back to the strengths of what Pixar is about, personally, which is like heart, but also craziness, and like that sort of unique way of like handling things. So like, there's like a very evil villain, and the plot is that there's a girl called Mabel. Her safe space is the nature she finds with her grandma, and she lives with her grandma until something happens. And then in the university that she goes to, she finds this doctor that she finds also like a love of nature with, and the doctor is implementing a program called Hoppers, which is allowing people to put their brains into robot animals. And they have to do that in order to save a piece of land that is special to Mabel, as the mayor is planning on building a highway around that
place.
And every single part, like even the mayor, I mean, sort of the villain, you know, that plays into part, and he has like a really funny part in it, and like story among that and among all the characters. But then you're introduced to this like wild side, it's like the animal side, and all those, like, they have their own voices because there's a translator in the robot which can
she can talk to the animals. Oh, cool. Yeah.
And they've got their own hierarchy, of course, like every, like kings of each, you know, insects and reptiles and so on. So they managed to pull off like this really wild, insane, but also really lovely and heartful story in here, and it's also pretty like intense in parts as well. Yeah. You know, when you find like things with the animals and their sort of way of life.
Well,
and
they do that well, Pixar. They don't shy away from tricky stuff. Do you know what I mean?
They're
really brave at that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's genuinely some things that I'm thinking about now, which are like, you as a kid, you'd be like, what the heck is going on? Like,
yeah,
even a la Terminator style parts in there. But no, overall, lovely,
good film, worth
definitely
a watch.
Go and check out.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm sure I'll end up seeing that. I'm quite excited to be honest. But yeah, I mean, they are amazing, aren't they? So yeah. Even the kind of, you know, Nick talked there about the kind of the layered storyline of that and stuff. They go big with the ideas and they really trust kids to get it. Do you know what I mean? Like things like Wall-E and things like the Elemental. And what's the one where they have the emotions?
Inside Out.
Yeah, they have big concepts and they trust kids to kind of get it. It's really impressive, I think.
Definitely.
It just, because even with this new one, it's like wacky, but relating to like previous films, there are ones that are just off the wall, but I think those are the most like treasured ones. Like I can think about The Incredibles, and that's
quite amazing.
Simple action film, but also is very much like about family values and like those connections in there and the relationships.
It's also really clever, The Incredibles, because you know they always sort of cleverly make them quite watchable for adults as well.
Yeah,
The Incredibles has spent a lot of time and effort given itself a proper 60s but 60s view of the future theme. It's really clever. Yeah, it's really clever.
The soundtrack in that film as well.
Yeah,
Pixar. Like the soundtracks are often so iconic, particularly the ones done well as well. Giacchino. But yeah, they kind of the attention to detail as well, I think. Like a lot of those, because they're dealing with such... I don't know if you call it high concept, because the concepts are like very imaginative. You'd think it kind of like would end there, but like when you watch the films, and this will extend to the Cars universe in some way as well. Like the attention to detail they've put into like how the characters move and do certain things with their, you know, for example, in Monsters Inc., the way certain monsters traverse is like very, very like unique to them.
That's you're a big Monsters Inc.
I am. Monsters Inc. I do a workshop on Saturdays, and then we also do like the holiday council. It's like teaching kids filmmaking, and in the lunch times in the holiday council, usually put on an animated film for them to watch while they're having their lunch. And I was sitting there making sure they're okay watching Monsters Inc. And I had to like leave because I knew a scene was going to come out that was going to make me cry. I was like, I can't go in there at the moment. I had to like go like Elliot, go in there. take care of it, because I just think that film, it's like funny, emotional, concept's amazing.
And the second one, Monster University, is pretty decent.
I haven't seen it in ages, so I've been meaning, but I'm just scared. I'm just like, because I could just watch Monsters Inc. again.
I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Okay,
I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Well, maybe that's my next.
So wheel. Okay, this is an interesting one then. Before we get on to Cars 2, favorite Pixar film and objectively the best Pixar film. So, because I think my favourite is... I don't know what my favourite is. But I think objectively the best one might be Wall-E.
Okay.
In terms of how, you know, like, I mean, that we talk about concepts. That is like... That's a life lesson for everybody.
I'll say Monsters Inc. is my personal favorite. I think for me, Ratatouille is truly like I really enjoy that film as well. It's definitely one of my favorites. But I can see why for some people that is the definitive Pixar film. Because I think when I saw that when I was younger, I didn't get it. Like I didn't get Ratatouille. It was a bit like the chef theme didn't really speak to me. But now when I'm as an adult, I'm like, oh, I get what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's not all about the rat cooking. It's like there's some other themes going on there.
And Nick, you quite like Luca, don't you?
Yeah, I was watching that yesterday as well.
It's nice, that
it was
one.
It was on Channel 4.
Yeah.
I quite like Luca. I do have my two though. My personal favourite is Ratatouille.
Okay.
Because it's just so charming. I love the message of that film entirely. Objectively, I think the favourite is... objectively, I think the best is Inside Out. Because I think that really is speaking to, like, adults and children.
Yeah,
like,
Inside Out's amazing.
That, like, you know, with a lot of lessons for kids in these films, but truly that is the one that speaks to everyone,
yeah,
I think.
And that also shows a little hidden part of Pixar's genius, which is... They get every single voice casting they do is so perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like Owen Wilson's Lightning McQueen.
Right.
Or like, you know what I mean? Like every single, the Ratatouille guy, like single voice actor they get is always absolutely perfect. And all the emotions and Inside Out, really... they've got them absolutely spot on, I think. Mm. Yeah, really good.
Well, what about you, Sam? What are you saying?
I would concur that I think Inside Out is objectively the best Pixar film. Yeah, for similar reasons. I think I saw it when it came out when I was a very cynical 15-year-old. I was like, this is insane. This is so good. It had me crying in the cinema. I was probably the only person of my kind of age in there. But it was still like, oh, this is...
It's high concept, right?
Yeah, and not to mention there's that part where they go through like the different art styles and that whole land of whatever it is when they pass through the shortcut to get to the train and like actually having like 2D going all that way. And I think that's just really cool. They do really great things in there.
And these films, they take years, right? Because, you know, at the end of the credits, because we always have to sit to the end of the credits, they always have a list of all the babies that have been born to the actors, cast and crew during the making of it. And there's always at least...
20 to 30.
There's a lot of babies born during the making of a Pixar film to people working on a
production Pixar. Babies.
Yeah, which makes me think they must be like 3-4 years in the making, I guess.
I mean, Cars 1 to 2 was like 5 years. And then Cars 2 to 3, I was looking, was like 6. Cars 3 is nearly 10 years old now, by the way, guys. I looked at that.
That is mad.
Even when the trailer for that came out.
Okay, so you've brought it up there, Roberto. We have to go in. We spun our wheel last episode and Cars 2 came up as our watch along. This is a big favourite in my house.
Yeah.
My son Freddie, huge fan of it, mainly because the Michael Caine character, Finn McMissile, drives up a wall.
Yeah.
And when he was about 4, he just couldn't get over how amazing that was.
He does a lot of cool stuff in this film.
So I think that's probably what's pulled us in. But I didn't know this is a film that a lot of people have very mixed views on, right?
Yeah. I think this was the first Pixar film I knew of that people went to see and were like a bit like, maybe not.
As far as I'm aware, this was the first Pixar film where everyone was like, this isn't Pixar. Mm. Like, this is not the quintessential Pixar that we know. As far as I'm aware. I also saw it in the cinema.
I also saw it in the cinema.
Oh, okay. So we all... Okay.
Like, when it came out, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I remember this... For some reason, the cinema trip for Cars 2 sticks in my brain quite a lot. And I think it's for a few reasons. One, my dad, before we went in, was like, I'm looking forward to this one myself. I don't know if that's because my dad likes Pixar or if my dad's a mechanic. He loves cars. So maybe that was the main reason. Two, weirdly, this film might be one of the times I've laughed the hardest in a cinema. And then also my sister next to me also laughed really hard at one bit as well, to do with John Turturro's character, the Italian Francesco. I think the third reason is just kind of like those Pixar family cinema trips just always hit a bit different.
Yeah. So I'll give people a very quick overview. Cars 1, you've probably seen it. Lightning McQueen is Owen Wilson. He's got a mate called Tomata, who was very popular in the first one. So the second one is, if you're going to be cynical, a slight attempt to shoehorn Tomata into a bit of a more of a starring role.
Definitely.
And he's essentially recruited by British Secret Service to kind of stop a baddie and go around the world doing it. That's pretty much, you know, the concept. So who wants to go first on Cars 2?
This film caused me some real existential thoughts.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I don't even know. It was painful for me.
Ooh.
I really did think, what is going on in this universe, this nightmare world where cars, there's no people in this world.
There is no people.
It's just cars.
Did you not know this before?
No, I definitely did to some degree, but I didn't really think about it actively until I was
watching it. What's your issue with no people being in it?
Because all the cars are kind of just like cars in our reality. So they're all built for humans. They're like ergonomically built for humans. They've got doors. They've got like, you know, steering wheels and stuff. But there's no people operating these cars. So, you know, what's going on? And then there's at one point, Tomita goes and eats some wasabi thinking that it's pistachio ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, right. Firstly, this guy should not be eating pistachio ice cream because he is a car. And I know that...
Yeah, because they normally drink like petrol in the sort of pub type petrol station. Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't know. It's... Okay. Clearly, I'm taking this way too seriously.
But, I know.
But I really took issue with the world of Cars 2. I don't know. Yeah. I really was like, this tomato guy, come on. Let's get real, man. Like, he's really, really messing stuff up. And Lightning McQueen has a right go at him early on in the film.
Yeah.
And that causes them to kind of spoof and they're sapping direct. And I did, you know, you're meant to feel sad for him. And I did to some degree. But I also was like, this guy is a doofus. Like, come on, man. Think about what you're doing.
I do sort of want to chime in and say, yes, there were always like Sally's like, oh, why didn't you bring, you always bring the like the other crew to your races. Why not Tomato? It's like, yeah, there's good reason why Tomato's not brought to anything. He's always doing shenanigans and like wrecking your professional career, right? If you're trying to be a professional, you don't bring MAGA Mater, basically. And then, he just sort of like, makes the wrong choices, but I suppose towards the end, you know, that's the arc that he has, and
also as in a desperate bid to try and defend Cars 2, which is popular in my house, isn't there a kind of, he does a few slightly jammy things, which means that Michael Caine's character mistakenly thinks he's got more about him than he has. Do you know what I mean? I think they do kind of try and cover that off. There's a few mishaps that end up making him look good inadvertently, and that's what my case. Oh, look at this guy!
Yeah, that's quite a good joke, running joke. Mm. And when Michael Caine's like, "Oh, you're so good at being an idiot," and then it's really sad. That was like, oh,
that was a bit.
Oh,
that
poor Tomato.
Yeah, it was because Michael Caine says it with such enthusiasm, and then Mater takes it like so hard. That was quite a, like, it was like that perfect line of like funny, but also like, okay, that was pretty rude.
That's pretty weird.
But I'll say this about Cars 2, right? I think certain films, when they get lambasted on launch, there can be some quite interesting and perhaps some complicated social reasons why they perhaps didn't receive the love they deserved on launch. I think Cars 2 is, I think the reason people don't hold this film as high esteem as even the first Cars is that there aren't many people on planet Earth who like went into that film going, what I want to see right now is the character of Tomato become a spy. I think that is kind of where it starts and ends. Because honestly, I think craft-wise, you know, it's not Pixar's best animation, but it's still pretty good. I think, you know, talking about attention to detail earlier, there's like the way they move these cars around and make them do karate and, you know, Finn McMissile's gadgets and the way they are like, you know, bending over backwards to try and like make these cars do things that no car could feasibly do, but make it look grounded as well is like quite impressive.
Also, do you think this is an example of them learning as they go a bit? Because I think they maybe made a bit of a cynical choice here where Tomato was very popular with kids watching the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before they, because it was early-ish in the Pixar universe. And before they kind of got really good at protecting their art or whatever, I think there was a bit of a rush to like, we need to come up with a few different stories and we'll pick the best one of why Tomato would be the main guy in this car. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they haven't really made that mistake since. But I think they made it with this one.
Yeah. You guys go.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure about this, but I think the Cars films were some of the first that had some like heavy Disney intervention in how they were made.
And they probably wanted to get the toys out and the games out and all that kind of thing.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
But I think Cars 2 was one of a case of that where Disney had quite a heavy hand in how it was made and how quickly it was put out. Yes, because generally Pixar are very protective of their brand. And
I can't remember if it was after the first Cars or after the second Cars also that they started doing Mater spin-off shorts.
Oh, my boy Freddie loves those.
Yeah. Oh, I won't talk much about them. Not badly. But I know that they are very, I mean, seemingly then that means, I think, that Mater actually is like, suppose, probably the most popular car.
So I think what happens, I think, you know, with my dad's hat on, I think what happens is there's always a really obvious kid favourite in all the films. So like Olaf is the same. Olaf from Frozen has his own little series of shorts as well. So the films are so good, but kids are still kids. There's always one kind of daft, obvious, a bit like, you know, like the baddie in a pantomime or something. Like,
Yeah.
So like Tomato in that one, Olaf in Frozen, like there's a really obvious kid favourite in them, and they quite often get their own little cynical Disney spin-off thing.
Yeah, presumably so. I mean, but I mean, in context of Cars 2, it's just like, get something right. I mean,
so
he doesn't.
Nick, hit us with your list. I know you've actually got a list here, so hit us with your list. Let's have it.
I just did this quote. I like statements. Like, literally, my first statement is, why would Mater be brought to anything that McQueen is affiliated with as a professional? borderline peddling in racial stereotypes.
Right, I was also going to think about this.
Cause, like, especially the Japanese, actually any one of them, but Japanese, I think, is possibly the worst.
Yeah, again, this is not defending it. You know, we talked a bit about learning as they go. Yeah. Pixar is now very hot on proper representation
from
the cultures they're covering. I think in the Cars 2 days, maybe a bit less so.
I think I did find this especially interesting because I think even in Cars 1, there's like some interesting choices as to like which cars are like, you know...
Yeah, like the German is very serious.
Yeah.
And they got Lederhosen on.
Yeah.
And like which kind of cars are the more flash ones they might, you know, ethnicity they decide to make that car as a result. And it's a bit,
Well, noticeably, I did notice that some of the Japanese cars, they're all like Suzukis, which are Japanese cars, like Mazdas or whatever.
Yeah, that's mad. So Suzuki must have said yes, that's fine. Like they must have a little.
There's no brand on the car, but I mean, it's the same shape and model looking of that sort of thing. And I mean, even with that whole wasabi part, it is a bit like, mate, is that what you get? To be honest,
that scene was the first time I found out what wasabi was. I'd like never heard or like seen wasabi until that scene where Mater ate it, and then that was a good lesson of like. And never eat too much wasabi.
The statement I wrote on that was, hope he learns his lesson on cultural differences as he burns from wasabi consumption.
you really don't like Mater.
Sorry. Bruce Campbell cameo is the most convincing voice work.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say. Bruce Campbell from Evil Dead 2 plays the American car who gets killed.
Yeah.
There's another thing about this film. There's a surprising...
Yeah,
surprisingly high body count. Finn McMissile catches a few bodies.
Yes, he does.
Machine guns,
which is a good representation of like a good like you know James Bond sort where he kills without remorse and then makes a joke afterwards. Like so, they got that. There's an accuracy there. But yeah, that was surprising. But yeah, Bruce Campbell makes a cameo. Continue.
No. I just think it's the most convincing voice work, and perhaps it's just Bruce Campbell doing his shtick.
He's just charismatic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you think there's a thing of Cars 2, like after this backlash that I didn't know about on Cars 2? Because a lot of what we're saying here is some of it's a bit too dumbed down almost, which sounds mad for a kid's film, but do you know what I mean? Because the beauty of Pixar films, they're not dumb. They're clever and they're layered. And it's almost like they've gone a bit dumb on this one. And that's why people are annoyed with it.
I think Cars 1 was also turned around. Like Cars 1 has a lot of, I think, like a lot of perceived heart to it. But I definitely think it's the broad strokes are a lot simpler than other Pixar films. And this one is like further on that scale.
Yeah, I just think it's a bit basic.
The heart isn't.
I don't mean it's dumb. It's like it's dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, silly.
Yeah,
like, but also that's like a kid's movie.
So it'll do yeah. as so it'll do as a kid's film, but because of the high bar Pixar have set themselves, it's not good enough for Pixar. So like if it was just on telly as a kid's film, you're like, yeah, it's a film.
Like we've talked about Pixar films being for kids and adults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not for adults.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
That's sort of that's why I sort of feel about it.
I think another a good comparison as well is like Studio Ghibli. Like there are lots of Studio Ghibli films that aren't as well known and they're kind of not as well liked as some of the bigger hits. But when you watch them, or at least when I watch them, I'm like, this is still pretty great. Like this is still pretty good stuff. Like Cars 2 is not wouldn't give the label great. But you know, there is a quality to it. There are still qualities to the craft going on, I think.
Did they pull it round with Cars 3? I can't remember what happens in Cars 3.
Cars 3 definitely... Well, you were talking about this earlier.
I was watching it, so
I tried
to watch a little bit of it.
A younger car, a young female...
Trainer coached for...
Yeah,
Lightning
it's
McQueen.
A bit like Karate Kid. Lightning McQueen starts coaching a young... Yeah, okay.
It's. I mean, the animation's an improvement, I'll say that. Because I thought Cars 2 animation was flat.
Like, it's definitely not.
There's no lighting on anything. It's just like no shadows or whatever. Like it looks really crazy. Bit like TV animation.
Yeah.
A couple more things. Is every mode of transport anthropomorphic? Even the buildings and topography look like cars.
Yeah.
Like the mountain has like a wheel and thing on it.
I feel like I have to bring this up as well. Like obviously you see this in the film, but you know, we can't ignore the existence of Disney's planes.
Yes.
Which pretty much confirms, yeah, like every vehicle is.
Yeah, no, it is.
And you even see in this film, like, planes that carry cars are also alive themselves. Like
yeah, so what do they think about what they're doing, you know? What do they make of that? Like, I've got, like, 200 cars in me.
I mean, I have to warn you, we're running out of time a little bit, so that might be a bit of an existential question for next time.
What
the other vehicles in cars think of their universe is, I think, might have to be a spin-off special.
Yeah, but I definitely, yeah. So yes, the answer is yes. Everything
every
is. And Big Bentley as well, which didn't look like a car, but I told you in the car, I was like, when he said Big Bentley, I was like, oh, that's like a piece like being verbose. And I was like, oh no, it's a car pun. I don't,
Eddie Izzard, main baddie in this, is that right?
Oh, that's who it was.
So yeah. That's kind of, admittedly, that was a bit weird.
I do also just want to add, we were talking about perfect voice actors like casting today. My hot take, Owen Wilson as Lightning McQueen, not perfect. Like, good, not perfect.
Ooh.
But guys, you can't deny Larry the Cable Guy is the perfect guy to play Tomata.
I mean, like,
he is that guy.
He is that guy. Does he sound like that?
I think so.
Yeah, like, fair enough. Of all the challenges that some of us have with it, you never doubt Tomata's like truth. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you buy him.
Yeah,
you buy him.
And when he's being smart about car parts, like you go, okay, no, he does know what he's talking about.
He does.
You know, I just had an idea that if they never do a fourth or a spin-off where Mate has family, they should have like Willie Nelson play his dad or something like that.
yeah.
Love that.
For like him and Woody Arlson.
Right.
Right, okay, we've ended on a bit of a high there, I think. But Cars 2, not our most popular watch-along.
I watched it, I didn't feel strong emotions, but I also, like, there were parts I was like, that's kind of funny, that's kind of interesting. You know, it's okay.
And Sam, your thoughts?
I can't say that I had a bad time watching it. That would be a lie. It was very entertaining.
But it raised some issues.
It raised some concerns.
And
there was one line in it where someone announces before a race starts, "Ladies and gentle cars," and I was laughing at that for such a long time.
It's also
got some great stuff.
Not to add fuel to the fire on this, if you watch Cars 1, there's a scene where flies are also cars.
Yes, they're beetles.
Again, just dropping that in there. So flies are cars. Insects
are
cars.
Volkswagen Beetles.
Insects are cars as
crazy.
Well.
That's crazy.
Anyway, that's there. Viewers can think on that.
I have less of a problem with it than you do. I really do. Right,
I don't have it.
I think the last one's got to go to Nick because he has done a Melvin Bragg style deep dive on this. So Nick, final thoughts.
Yeah, it was fine.
I don't think Mater is MAGA, by the way. I just want to drop that in because you said that earlier.
Yeah, no, I know.
I don't believe that.
Pandering. I'm pandering as well.
Yeah, and we will never know, and we will not discuss it on this podcast. Right, coming up, we will find out what's coming up at the Podyssey soon. But Hoppers is going to be about, so keep an eye out for it.
And Toy Story 5 as well.
Toy Story 5. Another
Pixar sequel.
Yeah.
Is on the way, so keep a
bit of pressure on that because Toy Story, obviously an amazing franchise, but people may be wondering if they need a fifth, I reckon. Yeah, so, yeah. Bit of work to do on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back in a second. Hello and welcome back to part three of the Podyssey. We've managed to calm Nick down a little bit during that break about Cars 2. We won't make him watch it again, I promise. There's some good stuff coming up at the Odyssey in the next few weeks. Roberto, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to a film I've already seen before. So my recommendation for today's Podyssey is, you're going to roll your eyes, surprise, surprise for me, Akira, which is the 1988 seminal anime film classic. It's highly influential, not just in animation, but also in film in general. I think one of the most recent examples is, did you guys watch the Jordan Peele film Nope?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I really like that film.
When Kiki Palmer does her bike slide at the end and she slides on the bike sideways, that is a direct reference to Akira, a reference to one of like the most famous bits of animation, I would say. So Akira is a film set in a dystopian future in Japan, in Tokyo, Neo Tokyo as it is, and it's about a biker gang and some of their members getting involved in a government conspiracy involving psychics and essentially experimentation that has gone awry. I don't want to say much more than that because I think there's a lot of intrigue to discover with Akira. But just know it's an incredibly important piece of animation, important piece of anime, and kind of it's credited as kind of the reason anime has become so popular. It's kind of one of the earliest examples of it reaching a Western audience. I'll say as well, when I was younger, my dad and sister rented it on DVD, and I walked in on some moments towards the end, and I didn't get scarred necessarily, but I did. I was like, oh, animation isn't just for kids. Oh, okay, interesting. So yeah, it's a real feat of animation and storytelling as well. It's a very kind of powerful story about kind of what happens when the powers that be decide to treat us like guinea pigs.
Very good. Do you know when that's showing? If not, people can find out on the Odyssey website.
Yeah. that is showing Sunday the 3rd of May at 12:30. So very if you're good. Looking for a real jolt in the arm on a Sunday morning, I recommend Akira.
Very good. Nick, what are you excited about?
A couple of things. Firstly, I want to recommend the National Theatre live performance of All My Sons. This is a breakthrough performance that was filmed live in London. This is starring Bryan Cranston, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, based on an Arthur Miller play. Arthur Miller I enjoy from the book A View from the Bridge, which is all just more about like Americana and the American dream, but also the sort of underbelly of that and how twisted that can be. And All My Sons is sort of just based around a family of sort of those American values. But again, that sort of gets twisted on its side and shown like the gritty side of that. Which is on Saturday the 18th of April at 7 o'clock.
They are very well done, those theatre ones, because if anyone listening is wondering what it's like to watch the theatre at the cinema, I've seen a few of them, some of the audience actually, and yeah, they do it very well, don't they? Like you probably feel like you're at the theatre. It's not like watching a film, but you do feel like you're at the theatre. You don't miss anything. It's very well filmed. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are quite unique as well in the way that they are filmed and pro shot. Everyone is different.
Yeah.
And I think that's also reminiscent of like how you feel when you go to the theatre.
Yeah, yeah.
The second thing I want to address, which is also a bit of theatrics, some of the grandest theatrics you may see is The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Oh, yeah.
This is the end of the trilogy. I got to watch the second one a few weeks ago. And these are all the extended editions, by the way. I mean, you can't not have the extended editions. We're showing that on the 25th, Saturday the 25th of April at 12 o'clock. Yeah, it's the end of the trilogy. It's, you know, it's one of the most awarded films by the Oscars in the last couple of decades. And Peter Jackson just managed to really hit it off for the conclusion of the saga.
They are amazing, those films, all three of them. Amazing.
I will say I rewatched Fellowship the other day, extended edition for the first time, and then I'm going to finally watch the rest of the Two Towers because I've never seen it all the way through.
Is that the middle one?
That is the middle one. What? Yes. And also Return of the King. I think I've only seen like the first half an hour and maybe like a bit at the end. So that's kind of my mission this week.
They are great films. They're quite interesting because they were among those first films where they don't give you an ending as an audience. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So because there's part of a huge story that's been cut up. I remember Pirates of the Caribbean did it as well. Like there was a real moment when suddenly films came out that just ended without the story having ended. And you always felt, it took a bit of getting used to that in the cinema, that you don't leave with a kind of nice wrap-up.
I was thinking that watching it the other day. I was like, oh, yeah, this must have been weird for people, like, going to see this whole three-hour film, and at the end it's like, that's not the end.
Yeah, it's like we zoom out, they just carry on.
Yeah.
No, very good.
Yeah, definitely go and see it if you've never seen it. And watch the first and second at home.
Yeah, superb films, really good films. Sam, what are you excited about?
I'm very much looking forward to seeing Project Hail Mary.
Yes, me too.
It's the new film based on a book by Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian. So it's a similar kind of vibe to that. I'm especially looking forward to seeing this because the cinematography is by Greg Fraser, who did the Dune films, The Batman as well. He's kind of one of the best cinematographers working today, and some of the shots that I've seen from this film are absolutely unbelievable.
And yeah, so for me and people listening who don't fully know, like, what's a cinematographer doing? What's he doing in a film?
So they kind of plan out the shots, I guess, and decide how the image is going to look.
Right.
The director is kind of more broader, like, giving the vision of how the scene is going to play out.
So cinematography is how it actually looks.
Yeah,
so the director is like making sure the story gets done, and the cinematographer is like, this scene is going to look like this.
Yeah, executing it.
I
think more to, I would say, if when people ask me about cinematography, what I would say is like, when I did university, what I was like surprised to find out is like most of cinematography is like lighting, and then like it's like, I think you think camera first. And camera's obviously very important, but like lighting is a massive aspect of it. And like, I think you can look at kind of the best cinematographers like Roger Deakins and Greg Fraser, and the way they use lighting is incredibly kind of singular to them particularly. So that's kind of what I would add in, just to add a bit of detail.
So Sam will be going to this for cinematography. I'll be going for Ryan Gosling,
who I'm a big fan of. Yeah, he's like the guy of the moment right now.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's so good in everything. Very charismatic. I think this is no exception to that. It's the book. I've not seen the film yet, but I read the book, and it's very charming, really lovely story set in space. Ryan Gosling is playing a school teacher who wakes up on a spaceship, and he doesn't know why he's there or what's going on, but he's on this like last ditch effort to save all of humanity in space. He's got to do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, amazing. I think he'll be really good at that. We were talking a bit off air, me and Roberto, about Ryan Gosling, but he's had an interesting journey because he came out of the traps in The Notebook, and it was basically everyone's favorite romantic film for years, and then he clearly just made a decision, I don't want to be that guy. So then he appeared in those Lars von Trier's really violent films like Drive, and another one that I didn't even dare to see called Only God Forgives.
That one is actually horrible.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I was like, I don't actually like this. It's actually too much for me.
So he kind of almost went over there just to fully cut those ties and then kind of started again as the Ryan Gosling we know now.
Yeah,
no, he's excellent.
Ryan Gosling was part of that Disney Club clan. He was in it at the same time as Britney Spears was.
Weirdly, he grew up with Justin Timberlake living Justin in his house Timberlake or something. Yeah, very hard. Yeah, they're really? Okay.
He was also a young, he was in Hercules as a teenager.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. In a young Hercules TV show.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to Google this for definite, but it's something like one of them. So they're both in the Disney Club, Justin Timberlake and Ryan Gosling. One of them lived nearest to it. I think it was Timberlake. So kind of had the other one move in as a kid. So basically either Ryan Gosling lived in Justin Timberlake's house when he was a kid, or Justin Timberlake lived in Ryan Gosling's house when he was a kid. And on that very loose factual information, I think we've reached the end of another Podyssey.
Yeah.
Thank you, chaps. Enjoy that today. I think we've talked a bit about cars. We're going to try and finish in the style of Owen Wilson / Lightning McQueen.
Okay.
Just to make Nick's Monday morning That's even right. worse.
You look so Nick genuinely.
I'm just deflated. Like a tyre.
Oh my god, the car puns. Yes. Oh my goodness.
Right, who feels brave to go first? Roberta, I think you've got this one.
Okay. I think. Right. Because I can do the ka-chow, but okay.
Hey guys. Watch next week's The Podyssey. Ka-chow!
That's not bad, actually. It's not bad. I don't really know what his voice is like. Sam?
Okay. Oh, wow. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll see you on the next Podyssey. Yeah.
It's not bad at all. Nick?
Sorry. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to The Podyssey.
Not bad. Not good. Not bad.
Right. Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah. God, I don't even know what he sounds like. He's kind of like, come on, Tomater. What's the policy? Gosh. Ka-chow. Or whatever. Right. Okay. Apologies. Right. Please do listen again and keep an eye out for all those films. And we will see you next time on the Podyssey. Say goodbye, fellas.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.